Prologue. I want to believe. The 1990s uber conspiracy theory television series The X-Files was a decade-defining and culture-reflecting mosh pit of UFOs, extraterrestrials, psychics, demons, monsters, mutants, shapeshifters, serial killers, paranormal phenomena, urban legends turned real, corporate cabals and government cover-ups, and leakages that included a deep-throat-like cigarette-smoking man character played, ironically, by real-life skeptic William B. Davis. Gillian Anderson's skeptical FBI agent, Dana Scully, played off David Duchovny's believing character, Fox Mulder, whose slogans became posterized pop culture catchphrases, "I want to believe," and "The truth is out there." As the show's creator-producer Chris Carter developed the series' narrative arc, Scully and Mulder came to symbolize skeptics and believers in a psychological tug-of-war between reality and fantasy, fact and fiction, story and legend. So popular was The X-Files that it was parodied in a 1997 episode of The Simpsons entitled The Springfield Files, in which Homer has an alien encounter in the woods after imbibing 10 bottles of Red Tick beer. The producers ingeniously employed Leonard Nimoy to voice the intro as he once did for his post-Spock run on the television mystery series In Search Of, a 1970s nonfiction version of The X-Files. Nimoy: "The following tale of alien encounters is true. And by true, I mean false. It's all lies. But they're entertaining lies, and in the end, isn't that the real truth? The answer is no." No squared. The postmodernist belief in the relativism of truth, coupled with the clicker culture of mass media in which attention spans are measured in New York minutes, leaves us with a bewildering array of truth claims packaged in infotainment units. "It must be true. I saw it on television, the movies, the internet." "The Twilight Zone, The Outer Limits, that's incredible. The Sixth Sense, Poltergeist, Loose Change, Zeitgeist the movie. Mysteries, magic, myths, and monsters, the occult and the supernatural, conspiracies and cabals, the face on Mars and aliens on Earth, Bigfoot and Loch Ness, ESP and PSI, UFOs and ETIs, OBEs and NDEs, JFK, RFK, and MLK Jr., alphabet conspiracies, altered states and hypnotic regression, remote viewing and astral projection, Ouija boards and tarot cards, astrology and palm reading, acupuncture and chiropractic, repressed memories and false memories, talking to the dead and listening to your inner child. It's all an obfuscating amalgam of theory and conjecture, reality and fantasy, nonfiction and science fiction." Cue dramatic music. Darken the backdrop. Cast a shaft of light across the host's face. "Trust no one. The truth is out there. I want to believe." I believe that the truth is out there, but that it is rarely obvious and almost never foolproof. What I want to believe based on emotions and what I should believe based on evidence do not always coincide. I'm a skeptic not because I do not want to believe, but because I want to know. How can we tell the difference between what we would like to be true and what is actually true? The answer is science. We live in the age of science, in which beliefs are supposed to be grounded in rock-solid evidence and empirical data. Why, then, do so many people believe in what most scientists would consider to be the unbelievable? The demographics of belief. In a 2009 Harris poll of 2,303 adult Americans, people were asked to indicate for each category below if you believe in it or not. The results were revealing. God, 82%. Miracles, 76%. Heaven, 75%. Jesus is God or the Son of God, 73%. Angel, 72%. Survival of the soul after death, 71%. The resurrection of Jesus Christ, 70%. Hell, 61%. The virgin birth, 61%. The Devil, 60%. Darwin's Theory of Evolution, 45%. Ghosts, 42%. Creationism, 40%. UFOs, 32%. Astrology, 26%. Witches, 23%. And reincarnation, 20%. More people believe in angels and the devil than believe in the theory of evolution. That's disturbing. And yet, such results do not surprise me, as they match findings in similar surveys conducted over the past several decades, including internationally. For example, in a 2006 Reader's Digest survey of 1,006 adult Britons, 43% of respondents said that they can read other people's thoughts or have their thoughts read. More than half said that they thought they had a dream or premonition of an event that then occurred. More than two-thirds said they could feel when someone was looking at them. 26% said they had sensed when a loved one was ill or in trouble. And 62% said that they could tell who was calling before they picked up the phone. A fifth said that they had seen a ghost, and nearly a third said that they believe that near-death experiences are evidence for an afterlife. Although the specific percentages of belief in the supernatural and the paranormal across countries and decades vary slightly, the numbers remain fairly consistent. A majority of people hold some form of paranormal or supernatural belief. Alarmed by such figures and concerned about the dismal state of science education and its role in fostering belief in the paranormal, the National Science Foundation conducted its own extensive survey of beliefs in both the paranormal and pseudoscience, concluding, quote, "Such beliefs may sometimes be fueled by the media's miscommunication of science and the scientific process." I too would like to lay the blame at the feet of the media, because the fix then seems straightforward: just improve how we communicate science. But that's too easy, and it isn't even supported by the NSF's own data. Although belief in ESP decreased from 65% among high school graduates to 60% among college graduates, and belief in magnetic therapy dropped from 71% among high school grads to 55% among college grads, that still leaves more than half of educated people fully endorsing such claims. And for embracing alternative medicine, a form of pseudoscience, the percentages actually increased from 89% for high school grads to 92% for college grads. Part of the problem may be that 70% of Americans still do not understand the scientific process, defined in the NSF study as grasping probability, the experimental method, and hypothesis testing. So one solution here is teaching how science works in addition to what science knows. A 2002 article in Skeptic magazine entitled "Science Education is No Guarantee of Skepticism" presented the results of a study that found no correlation between science knowledge, facts about the world, and paranormal beliefs. Quote, "Students that scored well on these science knowledge tests were no more or less skeptical of pseudoscientific claims than students that scored very poorly," the authors concluded. Apparently, the students were not able to apply their scientific knowledge to evaluate these pseudoscientific claims. "We suggest that this inability stems in part from the way that science is traditionally presented to students. Students are taught what to think, but not how to think," close quote. The scientific method is a teachable concept, as evidenced in the previously referenced NSF study, which found that 53% of Americans with a high level of science education, 9 or more high school and college science and math courses, understand the scientific process, compared to 38% with a middle level of science education, and 17% with a low level of science education. So maybe the key to attenuating superstition and belief in the supernatural is in teaching how science works, not just what science has discovered. The problem, however, is deeper still and related to the fact that the majority of our most deeply held beliefs are immune to attack by direct educational tools, especially for those who are not ready to hear contradictory evidence. Belief change comes from a combination of personal psychological readiness and a deeper social and cultural shift in the underlying zeitgeist, which is affected in part by education, but is more the product of larger and harder to define political, economic, religious, and social changes. Belief-dependent realism, why people believe. Belief systems are powerful, pervasive, and enduring. I've devoted my career to understanding how beliefs are born, formed, nourished, reinforced, challenged, changed, and extinguished. This book synthesizes 30 years of research to answer the question of how and why we believe what we do in all aspects of our lives. Here I'm interested in more than just why people believe weird things or why people believe this or that claim, but why people believe anything at all. Why do people believe? My answer is straightforward. We form our beliefs for a variety of subjective, personal, emotional, and psychological reasons in the context of environments created by family, friends, colleagues, culture, and society at large. After forming our beliefs, we then defend, justify, and rationalize them with a host of intellectual reasons, cogent arguments, and rational explanations. Beliefs come first, explanations for beliefs follow. I call this process belief-dependent realism, where our perceptions about reality are dependent on the beliefs that we hold about it. Reality exists independent of human minds, but our understanding of it depends upon the beliefs we hold at any given time. The brain is a belief engine. From sensory data flowing in through the senses, the brain naturally begins to look for and find patterns, and then infuses those patterns with meaning. The first process I call patternicity, the tendency to find meaningful patterns in both meaningful and meaningless data. The second process I call agenticity, the tendency to infuse patterns with meaning, intention, and agency. We can't help it. Our brains evolved to connect the dots of our world into meaningful patterns that explain why things happen. These meaningful patterns become beliefs, and these beliefs shape our understanding of reality. Once beliefs are formed, the brain begins to look for and find confirmatory evidence in support of those beliefs, which adds an emotional boost of further confidence in the beliefs and thereby accelerates the process of reinforcing them. And round the process goes in a positive feedback loop of belief confirmation. As well, occasionally people form beliefs from a single revelatory experience, largely unencumbered by their personal background or the culture at large. Rarer still, there are those who, upon carefully weighing the evidence for and against a position they already hold, or one they have yet to form a belief about, compute the odds and make a steely-eyed emotionalist decision and never look back. Such belief reversals are so rare in religion and politics as to generate headlines if it is someone prominent, such as a cleric who changes religions or renounces his or her faith, or a politician who changes parties or goes independent. It happens, but it's as rare as a black swan. Belief reversals happen more often in science, but not at all as frequently as we might expect from the idealized visage of the exalted scientific method, where only the facts count. The reason for this is that scientists are people, too, no less subject to the whims of emotion and the pull of cognitive biases to shape and reinforce beliefs. This process of belief-dependent realism is patterned after the philosophy of science called model-dependent realism, presented by the University of Cambridge cosmologist Stephen Hawking and the California Institute of Technology mathematician Leonard Mlodinow in their book, The Grand Design, in which they explain that because no one model is adequate to explain reality, we are free to use different models for different aspects of the world. Model-dependent realism, quote, is based on the idea that our brains interpret the input from our sensory organs by making a model of the world. When such a model is successful at explaining events, we tend to attribute to it, and to the elements and concepts that constitute it, the quality of reality or absolute truth. But there may be different ways in which we could model the same physical situation, with each employing different fundamental elements and concepts. If two such physical theories or models accurately predict the same events, one cannot be said to be more real than the other. Rather, we are free to use whichever model is most convenient. Close quote. I take this one step further to argue that even these different models of physics and cosmology used by scientists to explain, say, light as a particle or light as a wave, are themselves beliefs, and when coupled to higher order theories about physics, mathematics, and cosmology, form entire worldviews about nature, and therefore, belief-dependent realism is a higher order form of model-dependent realism. On top of this, our brains place a judgment value upon beliefs. There are good evolutionary reasons for why we form beliefs and judge them as good or bad that I'll discuss in the chapter on political beliefs. But suffice it to say here that our evolved tribal tendencies lead us to form coalitions with fellow like-minded members of our group and to demonize others who hold different beliefs. Thus, when we hear about the beliefs of others that differ from our own, we are naturally inclined to dismiss or dismantle their beliefs as nonsense, evil, or both. This propensity makes it even more difficult to change our minds in the teeth of new evidence. In fact, all models of the world, not just scientific models, are foundational to our beliefs, and belief-dependent realism means that we cannot escape this epistemological trap. We can, however, employ the tools of science, which are designed to test whether or not a particular model or belief about reality matches observations made not just by ourselves, but by others as well. Although there is no Archimedean point outside of ourselves from which we can view the truth about reality, science is the best tool ever devised for fashioning provisional truths about conditional realities. Thus, belief-dependent realism is not epistemological relativism, where all truths are equal and everyone's reality deserves respect. The universe really did begin with a Big Bang. The Earth really is billions of years old. And evolution really did happen. And someone's belief to the contrary really is wrong. Even though the Ptolemaic Earth-centered system can render observations equally well as the Copernican sun-centered system, at least at the time of Copernicus anyway, no one today holds that these models are equal because we know from additional lines of evidence that heliocentrism more closely matches reality than geocentrism, even if we cannot declare this to be an absolute truth about reality. That said, the evidence I present in this book demonstrates how dependent our beliefs are on a multitude of subjective, personal, emotional, and psychological factors that make our understanding of reality such an enchanted glass and so full of superstition and imposture, in Francis Bacon's epigrammatic description. We begin with anecdotal evidence from the story about a man whom you will have never heard of, but who had a profound and life-changing experience in the wee hours of the morning many decades ago that drove him to search for ultimate meaning in the cosmos. From narrative evidence, we shall turn to the architecture of belief systems, how they are formed, nourished, reinforced, changed, and extinguished. First, conceptually, through two theoretical constructs of patternicity and agenticity, and then delve deeper into how these cognitive processes evolved and what purpose they serve in the lives of our ancestors as well as in our lives today. We shall then bore deeper into the brain, right down to the neurophysiology of belief system construction at the single neuron level, and then construct from the bottom up how brains form beliefs. Then we shall examine how belief systems operate with regard to belief in religion, the afterlife, God, extraterrestrials, conspiracies, politics, economics, and ideologies, and then consider how a host of cognitive processes convince us that our beliefs are truths. In the final chapters, we will consider how we know any of our beliefs are believable, which patterns are true and which are false, which agents are real and which are not, and how science works as the ultimate pattern detection device that allows us a few degrees of freedom within belief-dependent realism and some measurable progress away from its psychological trappings.